All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we're going to focus in Emirat Hashem for tonight and next week, in Emirat Hashem, on some of the topics concerning Megillas Esther. So whereas next week, we'll focus a lot more on the kind of the Yom Tov of Purim and the different aspects of the Halachos of Purim, really tying it into the deeper message of Chazal, tonight I'd like to focus a little bit more on Esther HaMalka. Esther HaMalka, I've always felt, is one of the most enigmatic figures in Tanakh. And the reason she's an enigmatic figure is because we really know very little about her. But at the end of the day, she becomes the dramatic heroine of the story. She's a young girl who's literally plucked from obscurity. We know absolutely nothing about her. The Megillah gives us a little bit of genealogical background. We know about the family she comes from. We know that she comes, ultimately, according to Chazal, from royalty, from King Shaul. But other than that, there's nothing really that we know. And to kind of compound that, you know, I've always felt, and I guess this is why there's a piece of me that feels profoundly sad for Esther HaMalka, which is at the end of the Megillah, when we all go ahead and we all start singing Shoshanas Yaakov, everyone is happy, everything is fantastic. So understand, the story of the Megillah ends happily ever after for everyone but Esther HaMalka. Meaning the Jews were saved, which is incredible. Salvation came about, which is incredible. But at the end of the day, Esther HaMalka is trapped in a marriage to a man that she did not choose, in a life that she did not choose. Compound that with the narrative in Chazal that she was married to Mordechai HaTzadik, which means, and now again, Mordechai becomes one of the most trusted advisors of Ahasuerus. So every single day, she's of course living with the king, but she sees her former husband coming and going within the royalty, again, operating in the inner circle of the king. A heartbreaking story. And it always struck me, this incredible dichotomy. We celebrate, we're all happy, everything is fantastic, and yet the heroine of the story, for her, although of course she has the great zechus to go ahead and serve as a primary actor in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan to save the Jewish people, I don't know what happiness she was able to find for herself in life afterwards. So I'd like to focus a little bit on Esther HaMalka and try to understand kind of like the deeper impact and the deeper meaning of her personality. So let's take a look at number one. So the Gemara says as follows, Haman min HaTorah minayin. So the Gemara actually says something very interesting. The Gemara asks, from where do we find, obviously Purim is a rabbinic holiday, which means that Purim of course comes about after the close of the Chumash, but yet we believe that the Torah is the source of everything. So as such, where do we find the scriptural allusion or a source to Haman in the Torah? So which the Pasuk says, Gemara says, Hamin Ha'etz. We find it from the Pasuk of Hamin Ha'etz. What is it referring to? If you take a look at number two for just a moment. So this is by Adam and Chava. After Adam and Chava go ahead and eat from the Eitz Das Tov Vara, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and confronts Adam, and Adam says, I went to hide because I realized that I was unclothed. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Vayomer, mi gid lecha ki eromata? Who told you that you were unclothed? Who told you, it's not that who told you was unclothed, who told you there's something to be ashamed about, being unclothed? Who told you this? Tell me, did you eat from the tree that I told you not to eat from? So the Gemara says something very interesting. So what's the scriptural allusion to Haman? It's the same letters. Haman is Hey Mem Nun, and Hamin Ha'etz. Have you eaten from the tree? So from here, Chazal see a scriptural allusion to Haman. Back to number one, Esther min HaTorah minayin. But from where do we find the scriptural allusion to Esther? The pasuk says, "Va'anochi haster astir." If you take a look at number three, so this is in Chumash Devarim Parshas Vayilech, and the Torah says, "Follows." To give you the backdrop to this, the background, Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, "You're going to die." And when you die, the people will not follow in your way. They will veer off in their own direction, do their own thing. And when they do that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Va'anochi hastir astir panai bayomahu al kol haro'o asher asa kifano el Elohim achirim. And God says, I'm going to get angry and upset at you. And as a result, ultimately, again, of everything that Klal Yisrael did, I am going to hide my face. V'hanochi hastir astir espanai. So again, the Gemara understands, where do you find the scriptural allusion to Esther? Again, same letters. Esther is from the same shoresh of Seser, of hidden. So therefore, where's the scriptural allusion to Esther? V'hanochi hastir astir es panai. I will hide my face. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, again, so what does that mean? So let's analyze this. So first of all, Chazal, this is not just like a cute idea that some rabbi decided to come up with to find, let's find the letters of Esther and Haman in the Torah and fantastic. No, there's something much deeper that's happening over here. What the Gemara is trying to understand is, when we ask for a scriptural source for a particular event which occurred after the close of the Torah, what we're looking is for biblical significance of later events. What Chazal are asking is, tell me, what's the deeper message of this story? We have two incredibly polar opposite personalities and characters, Haman and Esther. And the truth is, they're polar opposite for one simple reason. On the most basic level, why are they polar opposite personalities? If you were to describe Haman in one word? No. People aren't inherently evil, even a Haman, right? But what sometimes makes people do very bad things? Haman is selfish. Esther is selfless. Selfish versus selfless. This is the fundamental tension in the Megillah. It's not just Haman, by the way. It's Haman, it's Ahasuerus, it's Vashti. On the other side, you have Mordechai, Esther, Harvona. You have this tension of personalities, of individuals who are selfless versus individuals who are selfish. That's the most basic tension. What Chazal is trying to figure out is, tell me, what's the deeper understanding here? What's the real narrative? What's the real message that's unfolding in the Megillah? So let's focus for a minute on the Hanochi Astir. So if we take a look at number 4, so the Marsha explains very beautifully. He says, V'ze'amar Esther min HaTorah minayin. So what does it mean that the name of Esther is alluded to in Parshas Vayelech, where God says that as a result of the indiscretions and negative behaviors of the Jewish people, I will hide my face. What does it have to do with Esther Hamalka? So the Marsha advances an idea that we're familiar with. Va'amar Esther min HaTorah minayin, shehu ikar shma, va'amar anochi hastir astir. Hashim shebi amen iskayim mikra zeh shamar HaKadosh Baruch Hu astir. I'm just going to read one more line and we'll translate. Lefi sherachaku ve'estir yisrael atzma midibur anochi, shehu ikar emuna. So, hidamina, one more line. Laman iskay v'sayim shay yisrael kliyap. So the Gemara Megill explains. The Jewish people suffered a terrible spiritual setback. And where did this setback occur? Where did it begin? It actually begins even before the start of the Megillah, really at the beginning of the Megillah, when the Jews participated in the feast of Ahasuerus. Now understand, Chazal tell us that ultimately, again, what was the nature of that feast? Why did Ahasuerus put on this incredible party? So according to Chazal, according to Gemara Maseches Megillah, that was the end. Ahasuerus felt that the Jewish people were totally conquered, were totally subdued, and he had conquered the God of Israel. As a result of that, he himself had made a party. The Jews participated in that party. Participation in that party, even if all the food was glatt kosher, yashan, chadash, whatever you want it to be, right? Even so, participation in that party was a trespass against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the Ribono Shel Olam says, you rebelled against me. You turned your back against me. Va'anochi hastir astir espanai. Do you want to understand the entire dynamic of the Megillah? We know the Megillah is a story of Hester Panim. The Megillah is a story where God is present, but God's presence is very much hidden. God's presence is very much understated and almost appears on a meaning. You could read the Megillah as an incredible story, a dramatic story. And the truth is, you can read it as a dramatic story without even inserting God into the narrative. Of course, we know that you read the Megillah not only with your eyes, but you read the Megillah with your soul. And so you see the Yad Hashem, you see the hand of God in every step of the way. So says the Marsha, that's the connection. Esther, from where do we see our scriptural allusion to Esther? V'hanochi hastir astir espanai. God says there are going to be times that I go ahead and I hide my face. But even when I hide my face and seemingly withdraw from you, I am still orchestrating all of the events from behind the curtain. And in fact, that is the entire story of Megillas Esther. You look at the story of Megillas Esther, it looks hopeless. It looks like there's going to be a terrible ending. There's no one to come to the rescue and salvation of the Jews. But there HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind the scenes the entire time. In the Sefer Siduro Shel Shabbos, he says something different. He says in number 5, he says, So according to the Sidur of Shal Shabbos, the Gemara is actually asking a different kind of question, which is, what is the takeaway message of Megillas Esther? What's in general, like, what's the takeaway message? Is the message that they tried to kill us and we survived? So if you're going to make a yomtiv every single time they tried to kill us and we survived, we're all going to be putting on a lot of weight, right? Because and then every day is going to be a yomtiv, because the truth is, There are so many stories. So what's the deeper message? So says the Sidur Shal Shabbos something amazing. What can we learn? What's the message? And writes the Sidur Shal Shabbos so beautifully. Umishani va'anochi hastir astir sha'af gam besoch mechoshach hagalos yeshlan yeshuos upurkan tadir mustar v'tamar besoch ma'alech hateva. You know what the message of Megillas Esther is? The message of Megillas Esther is that even within the darkness, the hand of God is always there. That's the message. That's the message. Even when it looks like God is absent, even when it's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not there, the Ribono Shel Olam is always present and always orchestrating events. So again, from the Marsha and the Sidur Shel Shabbos, we understand that what Chazal are really asking is Estimin HaTorah Minayin is not just saying where do we find the scriptural allusion. It's looking for meaning in the Megillah story through a Torah lens. So through the lens of the Torah, of the Chumash, what is the deeper meaning of the Esther story? And if we put the Marsha and the Sidur Shel Shabbos together, what we have is as follows. Our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is exactly that. What is the most important thing to know in every single life relationship? Relationships 101, right? Most important thing to know is? Okay, maybe we should start a new series on relationships, right? You get out what you put in. See, the greatest problem in relationships is when people have expectations and people want to get, but they're not willing to give. If you want, the truth is, the best thing in a relationship is not to expect or want anything. That's the best level. Most of us are not on that level. We're human beings. We need some type of reciprocity and fulfillment from a relationship. Whatever you want to get out, that should be measured in what you put in. And never ever expect to get more out of a relationship than what you're willing to put in. And if that's true in my marriage, or it's true with anything else, it's true with HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. You want a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is true, God is the be-all and end-all of everything. But ultimately, it's a relationship. What I get out is what I'm willing to put in. The story of the Megillah is that the Jews stopped investing in the relationship. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, listen, I love you guys, but if you're not investing in the relationship, I'm not investing either. If you're not going to put something into this, then I'm sorry, I love you to pieces, but I can't keep showing up and have absolutely no reciprocity. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyahol removes himself. But then the Sidur Shel Shabbos is the second part of that lesson, is that even when God removes himself, because there is no relationship reciprocity, he never leaves. He's always there. Esther min haTorah minayin va'anochi hastir astir espanai. I'm going to hide from you. But even when I hide, just understand that I'm very much present. You may think I'm not there. And even when I'm upset at you, and even when I feel like you haven't put anything into the relationship, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm tired of giving. I'm tired of giving all of the time and getting... Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu has feelings, kiviyachol, right? I'm tired of giving all of the time and not getting anything back in return. So therefore, I'm going to withdraw. But even when I withdraw, don't think withdrawal means that I'm uninvolved. Withdrawal just means I'm here, I'm orchestrating everything, I'm pulling all of the strings, but you're not going to see me, but I'll of course see you. But I think that there's another lesson that's embedded over here. If you take a look at number 6, I shared an incredible halacha. The halacha says, ben ir shalach l'krach, o ben krach shalach l'ir. So quick, hilchos Purim. What's halacha Purim? We know that Purim is observed on two different days. In walled cities, it is observed, well, it's on unwalled cities, it's observed on the 14th of Adar, and in walled cities, it is observed on the 15th of Adar. So you go to Yerushalayim, it's the 15th of Adar. It's actually interesting. You know, the more archaeological finds they find, there are cities in Eretz Yisrael whose status is in doubt. For example, in Hebron. In Hebron, if you ever go to Hebron, you go up to Tel Romeda. So they're doing excavations there, and they've found walls that date back to the times of Avram Avinu. So the truth is, Hebron was never thought of as a walled city, But now, in fact, again, and there's a whole machlokus. When do they observe Purim in Hebron? So, of course, you know, there are always very firm people who observe 2 days of Purim. Baruch Hashem, right? There are people even outside of Hebron who observe 2 days of Purim. But people who observe a whole year of Purim, different year. In any event, so it's just interesting. Tveria has this status as well. Different. So the idea is walled cities, 15th of Adar. Unwalled cities, 14th of Adar. Shulchan Aruch deals with a very simple case. I live in Baltimore. What happens if I'm in Yerushalayim? What's my status? Or better stated, I live in Yerushalayim and I find myself in Baltimore. So when do I observe Purim? When do I read the Megillah? So the Shulchan Aruch writes in number 6, Ben Ir Shehalach Lekrach, if someone lived in a city is unwalled, goes to a walled city, so what's the halacha? O Ben Krach Shehalach Lir, or someone who lives in a walled city who goes to an unwalled city, Im Daito Lachzor Lemkom Bizman Kriyas Venis Aki V'lo Chazer, Kori Kim Komo. If my intention was to return home and celebrate Purim at home, and I get stuck in another location, then what's the halacha? I read the Megillah in accordance with my own minhagim, with my own locale, even though I am located somewhere different. V'im lo hayat b'dayta lachzer ela achar zman akriya, korim anshi amakum shusham. This is amazing. So now, let's say I go, I have the great schus to go to Yerushalayim for Purim, and I don't intend on coming home. Right? So what's the halacha? When do I observe Purim? Like a Yerushalmi. I observe Purim on the 15th of Adar. Okay, fine. This halacha is very unique. Why? Because if you take a look at number 8, the Shulchan Aruch says in a totally different context. Shulchan Aruch writes, listen to this. Mi sheyasha b'medina lamed yom. If you've lived in a particular city, Medina literally means country, but in this context it means a community, for 30 days, Kofin also litain staka lakupa in B'nai Medina. Once you've lived in a particular city for 30 days, you are obligated. They force you to contribute to the local charities. You have to. Some things don't change, right, in Klal Yisrael. Right? So again, this in all seriousness is a din of achrayus. You live somewhere, you have an obligation to support the infrastructure of the place that you live. So the Shulchan Aruch says, amazingly enough, you show up in a city, you're there for 30 days, they're going to show up at your house to ask you to donate to the local tzedakah. Yashav sham gimel chadashim. Once you've lived in a place for 3 months, kofen osu litin l'tamchui. You have to get the tamchui. The tamchui was the soup kitchen. Every community had a soup kitchen, which was for the greatest need. People who literally didn't have any food in their homes. So 3 months, you're living in a place, you have to get to the soup kitchen. Yashav sham vav chadashim. Once you live in a city for 6 months, Kofin also litin staka b'ksus shemechasim ba'aniye ha'ir. You have to give to the clothing gemach. So this is very interesting. 30 days you have to give to general staka. 90 days, 3 months, you have to go ahead and give to the soup kitchen. 6 months, you have to give to the clothing gemach. Once you live in a city for 9 months, kofin also litin staka l'kvura shekorim ba'asaniye ba'osim kol tzarchei kvur. You have to give to the chevra kadisha. Now I must have to give the Chevra Kadisha. Okay, interesting halacha. Why am I bringing this up to you? What doesn't the halacha demand of you? The halacha does not demand of you to start contributing to local mostos when? The day that you move in. Right? Because there's a concept that it takes time to go ahead and become a resident of a place. First of all, that can happen. You don't know how you're going to settle there. You're not going to settle there. So the halacha understands, this is in Hilchos Tzedakah, understands that again, you don't have to give as soon as you move in. Again, it's not too long. It's 30 days. But the idea is why? Because you don't take on the identity of a resident when? Immediately upon moving in. That's not how it works. You have to be somewhere for a little bit of time until you become a resident. And by the way, we find many other examples of this in halacha. The one exception to this rule is, take a wild guess, Hilchos Megillah. The one exception to this rule is Hilchos Megillah. If I am in Yerushalayim and I do not plan on leaving Yerushalayim, not for the rest of my life, for the next week, I'm not going back for Purim, I'm staying here. So the halacha is, I am a Yerushalmi for Purim. Now, I just want to point out, lest you think, oh, well, maybe this is in Eretz Yisrael. It's not true. We know, where does this issue come up all of the time? Right? For Yomtiv, right? This is a big discussion in halacha. What do I do if I'm someone who lives in Chutz La'aretz and I'm going to Eretz Yisrael for Yomtiv? Do I keep 2 days? Do I keep 1 day, Yom Tov Sheni, not keep Yom Tov Sheni? It's a raging machlokes in halacha. And in fact, the majority opinion is that a ben chutz laaretz, someone who lives in the Esrei, goes to Eretz Yisrael, keeps 2 days. There are very significant minority opinions on whom to rely on, but that's not the majority opinion. And you see this in every era of halacha, because there's a general concept that what? Your minhagim go with you. It's the same way that if you're invited out to lunch for someone and they only wait 3 hours between meat and milk, right? So you can't say, well, listen, I'm your guest, right? Call Masha, turn with the balabayas, I say, chutz me say, right? Whatever the balabas says, yet it doesn't work that way. In general, in life, your minhagim go with you. Whoever you are, it's a very profound idea on many levels, but whoever you are in terms of your halachic practices, those go with you. You could transition into something else, but that transition takes time. The one exception to this rule, Hilchos Megillah. That as soon as you decide you're not going home, you immediately become a Yerushalmi, or reverse is true also. If you left Eretz Yisrael and you're in Baltimore, you immediately become a Baltimorean, and you're going to go ahead and observe Purim on the 14th. So how do we understand this distinction? Why is it that Purim is different than any other area of halacha, where every other area of halacha, I need a transition period to become a citizen of this new community, of this new country, but yet Hilchos Purim, the change is instantaneous. Hilchos Purim, I'm in Yerushalayim, I'm a Yerushalmi. I'm in the diaspora, I'm a diaspora Jew. What's the pshat? I want to show you something amazing. Take a look at number 9. So to answer this, to understand this halacha, we're going to have to take a little bit of a detour. In one of the most dramatic episodes in the Megillah, so Mordechai says to Esther in number 9, Vayomer Mordechai lahashiv al Esther. Mordechai says to Esther, remember again, this is after, just to give you the context, the decree of Haman has become publicized. People know that Haman's intent is lahashmid, laharog, ula'abed. He wants to destroy all of the Jews. So what happens? Mordechai sends a message to Esther, and what does he tell her? What does he tell her? You have to go to the king and beg for the king to save your people. And Esther essentially responds, no. No, she says it nicer than that. I haven't been called to the king. Everyone knows if you go to the king without being summoned. But essentially she says, no, I'm not doing this. And Mordechai responds in such a dramatic way. Number 9. Mordechai lahashiv al Esther. Mordechai responds back to Esther. Al tidami b'nafsheich lihimalek beis hamelech l'mikol ha'yehudim. Do not imagine to yourself that you will escape in the king's house from among all the Jews. Ki ma'achareish tacharishi ba'eis hazos. For if you are quiet at this time, if you do not do anything, if you're passive, revach vatzala yamod liyudim imakom acher. Salvation will come from someone else, right? Salvation doesn't come from man. Salvation comes from God. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu often gives us the opportunity to be the agents of salvation. But God's plan is not dependent on any one of us. He gives us the privilege to be the actors on stage. He gives us the privilege to play an active role. But if I choose to shirk my life responsibilities, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to happen will happen with or without me. That's what Mordechai says to Esther. Listen, if you're quiet and you do nothing, it's okay. Salvation is not on your shoulders. God will take care of us. But va'at ubeis avich tovedu. But you and your father's home will simply disappear into the sands of time. And then Mordechai says to Esther, which are perhaps the most dramatic words in the entire Megillah, and who knows, perhaps it was for this very moment that you became queen. You know, Esther, this whole time, none of us were able to make sense of all of the events that were unfolding. None of us understood how a young, innocent girl is plucked from obscurity and Mamish becomes the queen. It defies understanding our expectations. No one understands how Mordechai has his position, how Achashverosh hasn't just killed Esther because he's done with her. Everything in this story doesn't make sense. So Mordechai says, listen, I don't know why God is doing what he does. Remember again, Megillas Esther is the first story of the post-prophetic era. It is the first story in Tanakh without a Navi. And when you don't have a Navi, when you don't have a prophet, you just try your best. That's all you could possibly do. Mi odeya im la'is kazo sigat l'malchus. Maybe this is why you became queen. Now remember, what happens right after this? I didn't put it on the sheet, but what happens right after this? Esther says, Leich kinos eskala Yehudim. Go and gather everyone. Tsomu alai. Tell them to fast for me, tell them to daven for me, and I'm going to go to the king. And remember again, she says those words that are haunting every time we read them. She says, I'm going to go to the king, Asher lo kadas, and we read it in the Tuna Vecha, Asher avadeti, avadeti. And if I'm lost, I'm lost. If I'm lost, I'm lost. So the Medrash says something amazing. Look at number 10. Umi odea, im la'is kazo sigat l'malchus. So Mordechai says to Esther, maybe this is the reason you became queen. So the Medrash says something amazing. Mikan atalama derech eretz. From here you learn a very important lesson. Derech eretz, by the way, doesn't always have to mean like derech eretz the way we use it, like good midos. Derech eretz, a life lesson, a dramatic lesson. Shelo yehe adam doche b'shte yadav. Ela yehe doche b'smol. Don't push people with two hands. Just push them with one. And which one? The left and not the right. Mordechai says to Esther, maybe it was for this moment that you became queen. And what happens in the next pasuk? Lech kenos eskala yehudim vitsamu alai. Says the Medrash something amazing. Esther is reticent to go. Esther is reticent to go. And what happens over here? Mordechai pushes her. Now, by the way, what Mordechai ultimately did was something amazing. If you notice again, he doesn't really lay on the guilt. What does he do? What does he do? Right? He tells her, listen, what you do or what you don't do, that's between you and God. But it's quite possible that this was the reason you became queen and this is the reason you were created. And by the way, if you don't seize your moment now, you deny meaning to your life and to the life of everyone who came before you and life of everyone who came after you. But no pressure. Other than that, don't worry about it. Whatever you decide is absolutely fine. Mordechai goes ahead and pushes Esther because he understands that Esther is reticent to go. So why is Esther Hamalka reticent to go? What's the issue? What's the problem? Why doesn't she want to go? Because at the end of the day, the Baal Shem Tov explains this. You see this in the other Sfarim as well. Esther Hamalka is a young woman who is saddled with so much baggage. You'll say to yourself, what baggage does Esther Hamalka have? So remember again, the Megillah alludes to it. From the first time we're introduced to Esther Hamalka, right? How are we introduced to her? Ki ein la av va'im. Omein es Hadassah. Whether her name is Hadassah, Esther, she's an orphan. What happened to her parents? Were they killed along with the exile? What happened to them? The Megillah doesn't tell us. All we know is that she's an orphan. And she's being raised by a relative by the name of Mordechai. She's alone in this world. And then what happens? Again, the king's having his pageant. Esther has absolutely no interest in partaking in it. Nothing. And then what happens? She's taken. And when she's taken, she refuses all of the perks, so to speak, of the pageant, right? She doesn't need to get her hair done. She doesn't want the makeup. She doesn't want the perfumes. She doesn't want anything. Why? Why doesn't she want anything? Because what does Esther Hamalka want more than anything in life? It's the same thing that most great people want more than anything in life, which is to be left alone. Great people don't look for greatness. Great people don't look for the center stage. Great people do not look for the limelight. Great people are happy to be alone with themselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like we've spoken about so many times, like David HaMelech. What was David HaMelech's great life aspiration? David HaMelech was never the little kid who said, you know what, one day I'm going to be king. Well, David HaMelech, you know what he said? You know what he wanted to be?
Shepherd.
A shepherd. And that's all. Just a shepherd. I don't even need to have the biggest flock. I don't have to have the best flock. I don't have the nicest flock. I just want to be a shepherd. Avinu. Again, happens to overhear Lech Lecho one day. Great people don't have a desire for the limelight. They have a desire to sometimes just be regular, just be normal. What does Moshe Rabbeinu want more than anything out of life? You know, the Mefarshim point out, why did Moshe Rabbeinu want so badly to come into Eretz Yisrael? Why did he want to come to Eretz Yisrael? So again, of course, he loved Eretz Yisrael. It was beautiful, wonderful. There's a simpler pshat. You know why? Moshe Rabbeinu understood that the tachlis of his leadership was to get the Jews from Egypt to Israel, to Canaan. Once he got to Canaan, he knew what was going to happen. This is before the sin of hitting the rock, before any of that. He knew that what was going to happen once he got to Eretz Yisrael. What was going to happen? He was done. There was different eras required different type of leaders. He was the leader to take them out of Egypt and to bring them to the promised land. It was not his job to lead the battle to conquer Eretz Yisrael. That was going to be given to someone else. So you know why Moshe Rabbeinu wants more than anything to come into Eretz Yisrael? Because what happens when he gets to Eretz Yisrael? What happens? He gets to go home. He gets to see Tzipora. He gets to see his boys, who would be adults regardless anyway by that time. But he gets to reclaim some type of normalcy. What does Esther HaMalka want more than anything? I've lost so much in life. And by the way, you know, when the Megillah, in general, gives you like these snippets of life trauma, generally it tells you there's even more that's not being included in the text. So she's an orphan at a young age. She's plucked into this world that she does not want to be a part of. She's chosen to be a wife to a man who's at times is more animal than human being. And again, everything that comes along with that, the trauma of this young girl, an innocent young girl having to live with this man, is overwhelming. It's absolutely overwhelming. So what happens when people endure an incredible amount of trauma in life? And what happens when people just feel that, like, the peckle is just too heavy? What happens? What do they say? I'm done. You know, someone once gave me an excellent mushel. You ever get a cup of coffee? So it's interesting that coffee has, I don't know what the scientific properties are, but it has like surface tension. So meaning if you go ahead and actually, you could fill up a cup of coffee, you could try this, you could fill up a cup of coffee and the coffee could actually extend over the rim, right? The coffee, it's the surface tension that holds it. So it's an amazing thing. You could fill up the cup above the rim, but if you put one extra drop in that cup of coffee, what happens? All over the place. What a metaphor for life. We could handle a lot, right? We could handle a lot. And I could even handle that which is above and beyond the walls of my utensil. But the surface tension only holds so much. At a certain point in time, if you put something else on me, everything will go pouring over the sides. Esther HaMalka, it's not that she doesn't want to help. It's die. It's enough. I can't, it's enough that I have to live this life that in a million years I never dreamed of. In a million years I never thought that this would be my lot. I never thought this would be my existence. I have to figure out how to summon up the mental and emotional energy to deal with this. Now you want me to go in and to advocate and to plead and to this. I can't do it. I can't do it. There's too much baggage holding me back for me to move forward. To which the Medrash says, what does Mordechai do? Sometimes in life, you need a nudge. Not a push. A push is with two hands and full force. Sometimes in life, you need a little nudge. Not a nudge with the right hand, but a gentle nudge with the left hand to propel you forward. Because right at the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, life is all about finding the courage to move forward. We all have things which hold us back. We all have challenges which hold us back. We have failures. We have shattered dreams. We have disappointments. We have letdowns. All the different things. Right? We all have our baggage, which at the end of the day holds us back. We all are like that cop. And I say to myself, you know what? I'm done. I'm just done. I can't do anything anymore. And in that moment, you have to find the courage. Sometimes in life, you're lucky enough to have someone who gently nudges you forward. Right? But if you don't have that someone to nudge you forward, you have to nudge yourself. Says the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, what's unfolding over here is Mordechai understanding. Esther, I got it. I understand it because I've been by your side every step of this traumatic life journey. You can do this. You can do this. And I'm going to help you. I'm not going to force you. I'm not going to push you. I'm going to give you the gentle nudge. Because life is all about finding the courage to move forward. I'll show you something amazing. If you take a look at number 11, the Rabbeinu Yonah writes something so beautiful. He says, "Hatorah," nothing to do with Megillas Esther, just an incredible insight. "Hatorah posachas bereshis ba'os beis." The Torah goes ahead and begins with the letter beis, which of course is intriguing on a variety of levels, because why wouldn't the Torah start with the letter aleph? But it begins with beis. Why? What's he got beis? Get ready for this. "Ki yusgura mishloshes stadeha." What's amazing about the shape of a base? You can look at it on your sheep. What's amazing about it? It's closed on three sides. And the only part of the base that is open is what? Is the part of the letter in front. He says, Lamdenu, She'ein lo la'adam lachshuv laharher, mala 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 mata malifnim mala achar. That a person should not spend their lives thinking, what's above, what's below, what's before me, what's behind me. She'kasher adam poseach u'maschil lasok b'torah, alav lishkoach mina avar u'lahabit ach rak al ha'asit. Sometimes in life, if you want to be successful, you have to stop thinking about the past and fully focus yourself on the future ahead. And even though, again, at some point I'm going to have to reconcile with my past, I can't totally ignore my past. I have to find those moments for cheshbon hanefesh, for introspection, for real self-analysis. But so much of life is just figuring out how to move yourself forward. Ulam, ikir ma'yanov, yu al ha'asit. Isn't this amazing? Says it, by the way, if anything you get from the shir, just as Rabbeinu Yonah, it's dramatically amazing. The Torah begins with the word beis, because the amazing part about a beis is you can't see above, you can't see below, and you can't see behind. The only thing you could say, you see, when you're standing inside of the beis is forward. Because success in life is all about moving yourself forward. We get so caught up in living, reliving, reanalyzing the past. We get so caught up with worrying about what's in the rearview mirror that we forget to move ourselves forward. Aleph is open on a whole bunch of sides, and there's times for introspection, and there's time for analysis, and there's time for contemplation, but so much of life is just the base. Just move it forward. Figure out a way to get yourself together and to move yourself forward. If you look at number 12, there's a beautiful insight from the great tzaddik, Rav Moshe David of Chartkov. I have to thank Adina for typing this up for me. It was a long story. So take a look at number 12. So Rav Moshe David of Chartkov writes as follows. He says, Mishum hachim shilu chazal. This is actually a beautiful idea. The Gemara says, Hai alma kebehi lula damya. This is actually quite beautiful. The Gemara says, the world is like a wedding. The world is like a wedding. So generally, the way we understand that is what? When you go to a wedding, so what happens? What happens? Baruch Hashem, so much to eat, so little time. Right? So there's a whole smorgasbord there, and I want to have some of this, I want to have some of that, but should I wash? There's fish, there's meat, I have a whole cheshbonos. And there's a limited amount of time, so you grab what you can. It's an incredible metaphor for the world. The world is filled with incredible opportunities. But when it comes to an end, life comes to an end. Whatever you got, you got. Whatever you grabbed. And whatever you missed out on, you missed out on. But the Chartkov Rebbe says something different. Listen to this. Shairuba da'alma yadam. So listen to this. Shairuba da'alma. Ein yadam masages lechatin es yiladein bechavod. Mibli litztarich lidei matnos basar vadam o lidei halva asam. So listen to this. He says most people, when they're making a wedding, so endure some type of financial strain. So it's good to see things haven't changed all that much, right? When you make a wedding, one thing is for sure, which most people require some type of assistance, whether it's a loan, whether it's a gift, okay? V'alkein, b'tikufa shlefnei achasana, asukim hori achasana v'akala losro lechapis meheichon yasigo ava, o nesina haguna kedei lechasos, u lehashlim es haotos hamerubos. Okay, so before the wedding, a lot of the preoccupation before the wedding is, how am I going to pay for this? How am I going to pay for this? And there are cheshbonos that go into this, right? How am I going to pay? And it occupies an incredible amount of mental energy. And what's true before the wedding is what? Certainly true after the wedding, right? Because at least some of the vendors that I was able to push off till after the chasana, now it's after the chasana, I have to pay the rest of the bills. So there's an incredible financial preoccupation. But look at this. This is incredible. Ulam, kol zeh b'yamim shalifneim u'b'yamim shalachareim. But all of this, right, this preoccupation with the money and the debt comes before the wedding and after the wedding. Yet, ach be'isachasena gufa, masichim ba'alei asimcha es da'ata mikol atirdos. Yet something amazing happens at the wedding. That same person whose kishkas were in a knot, because I don't know how I'm going to pay for this. I can't believe the machatonim needed to have that, right? Or anything else that happens with people. Those same people, right, during those couple of hours of the chasana, they forget about it, right? I'm lost in the simcha. Usmeichin hema b'simchasim b'leiv shalem. And during the chasana, I'm not even thinking for a second about all of that money. It doesn't even come into my mind. Ve'inam choshen, I'm smeichin hema b'simcha b'leiv shalem. I'm totally and wholly devoted to the simcha. Ve'inam choshen ala avar v'la dogim ala asid. I don't think about the money that I have spent, and I don't think about the money that I will spend. So says the Rebbe something so beautiful. This is the meaning of the Gemara, that the world is like a wedding. What does it mean? Ha'olam hazeh ki behilula damyo v'hachinami. Tzarech ha'adam la'asiach daito min ha'avar v'ha'asid ki behilula. V'yichya esimecheldo ali adamos b'simcha shal mitzvah. So says the Rebbe something so beautiful. That's the meaning of the statement of Chazal. The world is like a wedding. Sometimes you can't worry about what was, and you can't worry about what will be. You can only focus on what is. The Baalei Simcha, leading up to the wedding, a mess. After the wedding, maybe a mess again. But during the wedding, unbridled, immeasurable Simcha. Ha'olam hazeh ki bei hilula damyo. It's the base of Bereshis. We spent so much time hyperventilating over the past, obsessing over the past. I should have done this. I could have done this. Why didn't I do this? I should have handled it this way. And again, you can't change it. It's done, right? And some of us become paralyzed from doing things because we're worried about what's going to happen in the future. So the base teaches us, don't look up, don't look down, don't look back. Just look forward. Sometimes you just have to figure out, what am I going to do now? Sometimes you have to say to yourself, it's the chasana. I can't worry about the bills beforehand or the bills that are going to come afterwards. I just have to focus on the here and now. Now watch this. Let's close one circle. So remember again, we saw an interesting halacha, ultimately again, by Hilchos Purim. What was the interesting halacha by Hilchos Purim? What was the halacha? Wherever you are on that day, that determines your identity. Unlike in other areas of halacha, where your geographical location is determinant for your halachic status, so generally, again, you have to be in a certain place for a certain amount of time. Purim is different. The yisod of Purim is the base. The yisod of Purim, right, the essence of Purim, is the gentle nudge with the left hand that tells us, don't worry where you came from. Don't worry where you're going. Just maximize where you are. And therefore, what does the halacha say? I live in Baltimore, but if I find myself in Yerushalayim on the 15th of Adar, then what's the halacha? What's the halacha? I'm Yerushalmi for a day. Yerushalmi for a day. And conversely, if I'm a Yerushalmi for 15 generations, but I find myself in Baltimore on the 14th of Adar, then you know what? I'm a Baltimorean for a day, right? I'm an American for a day. Says the Baruch Haim, take a look at number 13. Va'al kein, daika bayom zeh. What is the entire essence of Purim? The entire essence of Purim is when Mordechai says to Esther, "Umi yodea im la'is kazo sigat l'malchus." Esther, this is the moment. Listen, Esther, my heart breaks for everything you had in the past. It breaks for you. And my heart breaks for the difficult future that you have ahead of you. Because no matter what happens, your future is not going to be easy. But Esther, what I need you to do in this moment is not think about your traumatic or tragic past and not focus on your unknown future. I need you to live in the moment. And I need you to maximize this moment. I need you to stop wasting emotional energy, obsessing over that which was and can no longer be changed, and worrying yourself, which may occur, but you do not know. The only thing, Esther, that you could control right now is what you do with right now, is what you do with the Ace Kazos, this very moment. Esther, right now, you're in the middle of that big letter base, that life letter base. It's the chasana now. What do you want to do? The base, you want to look back, you want to look up, you want to look down. There's only one direction, and that's forward. And there's only one time frame to focus on, and that's now. Writes the Be'er HaChaim. This is part of the dramatic message of Purim. You know, if you think about it, we have different Yamim Tovim which stress different themes. Right? What's the essence of the Yamim Noraim? Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, Chodesh Elul. What's the theme? Right? Theme is Tshuva. But how do you do Tshuva? What does Tshuva require? It requires reflection on the past, planning for the future. So there is a time, where you go ahead and you introspect the way you have lived in the past, and you focus on what you want to do forward. That's called Yamim Noraim. Purim is something different. Purim is not the past. Purim is not is the future. Purim is the present. Purim is the letter base. Purim is mi yodea im la'is kazos higat lamalchos. Focus on maximizing the moment you have in front of you. Because in reality, that's the only moment you control. You can't redo the past. You certainly can't script the future. So the only thing you can do, Esther, is live in your base. Move yourself forward. Do something absolutely dramatic. The halacha says, wherever you are on Purim, that's your identity. This is my first time in Yerushalayim. You're here on the 15th, Mazel Tov, you're Yerushalmi. You spent your whole life in Eretz Yisrael. You're in Baltimore on the 14th, Mazel Tov, you're an American. Right? That's how it works on Purim. Purim is about embracing and maximizing the present while stopping to think about the past and the future. I'll show you something amazing. Take a look. And before we get to number 14, now we can tie this all the way back. So if you remember again, look back at number 1 for just a moment. So if you remember again, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara said, Esther, Haman min HaTorah minayin, Esther min HaTorah minayin. So amazingly enough, we begin to see, what's Esther? What's Esther? So what was the scriptural allusion to Esther? It was number 3. So again, listen to what the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says. Va'anochi hastir astir panai bayom hahu. Sometimes in life, what do you have to do? Sometimes in life, you have to go ahead and turn your face away. Hanochi hastir astir espanai. What do you have to turn your face away from? What does the pasuk say in number three? What do you have to turn your face away from? Al kol hara asher asa. Sometimes you have to let go of the failures of the past. Sometimes you have to let go of the trauma of the past. Sometimes you just have to let go of the past. Why? In order to maximize Bayom Hahu. Look at that pasuk in number 3 for just a moment. Look what Chazal are teaching us. V'hanochi hastir astir panai. Sometimes you just have to turn away from what's behind you. Sometimes, again, I want to just be clear. There is a time to introspect. There is a time to reflect. There is a time to revisit my past. But it's not Purim. It's not Purim. Sometimes you have to shield your face from the past. Anochi astir astir esponai from what? Al kol hara asher asa. Turn away from the mistakes, the failures, the shattered dreams, the unrealized goals of the past. Let it go. Let it go. Why? For one simple reason. Bayom hahu. So that I can maximize today. Because if I use all of my emotional energy focusing on what was and worrying about what will be, I lose out on the profundity of the present. This was Esther Hamalka. Esther Hamalka evolved into this personality. Why? Why? Because she was lucky to have someone in her life who gave her the gentle nudge, one-handed nudge with the left hand. Pushed her out of the bays. Pushed her forward. Got her to stop looking in the rearview mirror and to start focusing on the life ahead of her. Esther Hamalka was fortunate to have a Mordechai in her corner. A lot of times in life, we don't have a Mordechai. You don't have a Mordechai. So you have to nudge yourself. You have to push yourself. You have to create your own base construct of existence. Stop looking up, down, backwards. Focus on moving yourself forward. And this, says Chazal, is the essence of Purim. You know what's interesting? We'll talk about this more next week. But you know, Purim, if you think about it, is one of the strangest Yamim Tovim. Why? Well, you all know why. Because it's a strange Yom Tov. It's just objectively a strange holiday. We do things that we never do the rest of the year. Like, men could wear women's clothing, women could wear men's clothing. You don't know that's an Isidar Isa. Biblical prohibition, you can't do excessive drinking. Again, we're okay with wine. We're okay with wine. But we're not okay with excessive drinking and drunkenness. In fact, Chazal write extensively about it. So what is the essence of Purim? What is it? So you say it's a big party. But what are you having a big party for? Because on Purim, what we do is we maximize the day to the nth degree. We do everything in an exaggerated form. Why? To get as much simcha as I can out of one 24-hour period. Right? Purim is all about maximizing my present. What about the impact that my simcha is going to have on the morning after? It's an issue, right? It's an issue, and it requires one to think about how they spend their Purim. But that's what Purim is. Purim is an overemphasis on the present to the exclusion of the past and the future. Because sometimes in life, you just have to figure out how to stop looking back and start living in the here and now. That's Esther. On the flip side, what did Chazal say about Haman? What this will end? So remember again, what was the pasuk for Haman? In number two, Vayomer ni gidlecha ki erom ata. What does God say? God says to Adam, Adam, did you eat from the forbidden fruit? Past tense. He's referring ultimately again to something done in the past. What's Haman, or who is Haman? Haman is the guy, Haman is the personality who cannot get out of his own way. Haman is the personality who is so caught up in the quote-unquote failures of the past that he has an inability to move himself forward. Where do we see this? Take a look at number 14, where this will end. So this is one of, again, I kept saying one of the most dramatic pieces of the Megillah. They're all dramatic pieces of the Megillah. But listen to what happens over here. Remember again, this is after the first party with Esther and Achashverosh. Haman is so happy. Haman is so happy. Right? So what happens? Mordechai doesn't bow. Doesn't bow. Haman gets all upset. Skip down a little bit. Skip down a little bit. So if you skip to Pasuk Yud Gimel. So Haman tells Zeresh, his wife, about all of the incredible things. I was invited to be with the king. I was invited to this party with the king and the queen. It's only me. And then Haman says something so amazing. Number 14, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. V'cholzeh, all of this greatness, einena shove li b'chol eis, asher ani ro'eh es Mordechai ha-Yehudi yoshev bashar ha-melech. And what does Haman say? You know that thing that happened 20 minutes ago that keeps happening? I just can't get over it. I can't get over it. What's a Haman? Hamin ha'eitz asher tzevisicha levilti. A Haman is a person who can't get out of his past. Right? But Haman, that happened 15 minutes ago. It's done. Let it go. He can't let it go. Because he couldn't let it go the time before. He couldn't let it go the time before that. And he's never been able to let it go. And when you constantly live with the quote-unquote failures of your past, you are unable to move yourself forward in life. And herein lies the fundamental distinction between a Haman and an Esther. A Haman is the personality that cannot let go of the trauma and pain of the past and therefore cannot move forward. An Esther personality is someone who is always aware of their trauma and difficulty, always aware of the peckle that they always have to hold, but they choose to live their life in a baze where I can't constantly look back, up or down. There's only one way to look, and that's forward. And this is what Chazal are saying in number one. Haman min haTorah minayin hamin haEitz. Esther min haTorah minayin vaHanochi hastir astir. You want to know what the essence of Purim is? We all have a choice in life. There are many things we cannot choose. We know that very well. But our disposition and our outlook in life is absolutely something we choose. And not just once. I was going to say we choose it every day. But the truth is we choose it every single moment. And you make a choice. Do you want to be an Esther or do you want to be a Haman? Hamina eitz asher tzivisicha leveltiachol. Do you want to be the kind of person who remains constantly mired in the failures, tragedies, and disappointments of the past? If you sign up for that, just understand, you're not moving anywhere in life. You will remain rooted in place, and you will never self-actualize. Or, do you choose to be an Esther Hamalka? V'hanuchi hastir astir aspanei, which means sometimes I have to turn my face away from the past. I have to turn my face away from the failures, from the hurt, from the letdowns, in order to what? To build up my bayom hahu, to build up my day. Chazal clearly tell us that they want us to be an Esther and not a Haman. The halacha tells us, be an Esther and not a Haman. And that's why the halacha says, wherever you are on Purim, that's your identity. Whatever city you're in, that's your identity. Why? Because everything about Purim is to drive home the lesson. Stop thinking about the past. Stop worrying about the future. And put your effort into maximizing your present. We should be zochem yirtzeh Hashem to internalize these lessons, both from the Megillah as well as from the Torah. And yirtzeh Hashem, find the courage to nudge ourselves just a bit forward in life.